Chapter 13. Together. Ah, you got to know that so soon, muttered Razumov negligently. Yes, we did. And it struck us that a man like you. Dot, what sort of a man do you take me to be? Razumov interrupted him. A man of ideas and a man of action too. But you are very deep, Kirillo. There's no getting to the bottom of your mind. Not for fellows like me. But we all agreed that you must be preserved for our country. Of that we have no doubt, whatever I mean all of us who have heard Alden speak of you on certain occasions. A man doesn't get the police ransacking his rooms without there being some devilry hanging over his head. And so if you think that it would be better for you to bolt at once. Razumov tore himself away and walked down the corridor, leaving the other motionless with his mouth open. But almost at once he returned and stood before the amazed Kostya, who shut his mouth slowly. Razumov looked him straight in the eyes, before saying with marked deliberation and separating his words, I thank you very much. He went away again rapidly. Kostya, recovering from his surprise at these maneuvers, ran up behind him pressingly. No. Wait. Listen. I really mean it. It would be like giving your compassion to a starving fellow. Do you hear, Kirillo? And any disguise you may think of, that too I could procure from a costumier, a Jew I know. Let a fool be made serviceable according to his folly. Perhaps also a false beard or something of that kind may be needed. Razumov turned at bay. There are no false beards needed in this business. Kostya, you good-hearted lunatic, you. What do you know of my ideas? My ideas may be poison to you. The other began to shake his head in energetic protest. What have you got to do with ideas? Some of them would make an end of your dad's money bags. Leave off meddling with what you don't understand. Go back to your trotting horses and your girls, and then you'll be sure at least of doing no harm to anybody, and hardly any to yourself. The enthusiastic youth was overcome by this disdain. You're sending me back to my pig's trough, Kirillo. That settles it. I am an unlucky beast and I shall die like a beast too. But mind, it's your contempt that has done for me. Razumov went off with long strides. That this simple and grossly festive soul should have fallen to under the revolutionary curse affected him as an ominous symptom of the time. He reproached himself for feeling troubled. Personally, he ought to have felt reassured. There was an obvious advantage in this conspiracy of mistaken judgment taking him for what he was not. But was it not strange? Again he experienced that sensation of his conduct being taken out of his hands by Alden's revolutionary tyranny. His solitary and laborious existence had been destroyed, the only thing he could call his own on this earth. By what right, he asked himself furiously. In what name? What infuriated him most was to feel that the thinkers of the university were evidently connecting him with Alden as a sort of confidant in the background, apparently. A mysterious connection. Ha ha, he had been made a personage without knowing anything about it. How that wretch Alden must have talked about him. Yet it was likely that Alden had said very little. The fellow's casual utterances were caught up and treasured and pondered over by all these imbeciles. And was not all secret revolutionary action based upon folly, self-deception, and lies? Impossible to think of anything else, muttered Razumov to himself. I'll become an idiot if this goes on. The scoundrels and the fools are murdering my intelligence. He lost all hope of saving his future, which depended on the free use of his intelligence. He reached the doorway of his house in a state of mental discouragement which enabled him to receive with apparent indifference an official-looking envelope from the dirty hand of the dvornik. A gendarme brought it, said the man. He asked if he were at home. I told him no, he's not at home. So he left it. Give it into his own hands, says he. Now you've got it, eh? He went back to his sweeping, and Razumov climbed his stairs, envelope in hand. Once in his room, he did not hasten to open it. Of course, this official missive was from the superior direction of the police. A suspect. A suspect. He stared in dreary astonishment at the absurdity of his position. He thought with a sort of dry, unemotional melancholy. 3 years of good work gone, the course of 40 more perhaps jeopardized, turned from hope to terror, because events started by human folly link themselves into a sequence which no sagacity can foresee and no courage can break through. Fatality enters your rooms, while your landlady's back is turned. You come home, and find it in possession bearing a man's name, clothed in flesh, wearing a brown cloth coat and long boots, lounging against the stove. It asks you, is the outer door closed? And you don't know enough to take it by the throat and fling it downstairs. You don't know. You welcome the crazy fate. It down, you say. And it is all over. You cannot shake it off anymore. It will cling to you forever. Neither halter nor bullet can give you back the freedom of your life and the sanity of your thought. ... It was enough to dash one's head against a wall. Razumov looked slowly all round the walls, as if to select a spot to dash his head against. Then he opened the letter. It directed the student Kirillo Sidorovich Razumov to present himself without delay at the General Secretariat. Razumov had a vision of General T.S. Goggle Eyes waiting for him, the embodied power of autocracy, grotesque and terrible. He embodied the whole power of autocracy because he was its guardian. He was the incarnate suspicion, the incarnate anger, the incarnate ruthlessness of a political and social regime on its defense. He loathed rebellion by instinct. And Razumov reflected that the man was simply unable to understand a reasonable adherence to the doctrine of absolutism. What can he want with me precisely, I wonder, he asked himself. As if that mental question had evoked the familiar phantom, Alden stood suddenly before him in the room with an extraordinary completeness of detail. Though the short winter day had passed already into the sinister twilight of a land buried in snow, Razumov saw plainly the narrow leather strap round the Cherkis coat. The illusion of that hateful presence was so perfect that he half expected it to ask, "Is the outer door closed?" He looked at it with hatred and contempt. Souls do not take a shape of clothing. Moreover, Alden could not be dead yet. Razumov stepped forward menacingly. The vision vanished, and turning short on his heel, he walked out of his room with infinite disdain. But after going down the first flight of stairs, it occurred to him that perhaps the superior authorities of police meant to confront him with Alden in the flesh. This thought struck him like a bullet, and had he not clung with both hands to the banister, he would have rolled down to the next landing most likely. His legs were of no use for a considerable time. But why? For what conceivable reason? To what end? There could be no rational answer to these questions. But Razumov remembered the promise made by the general to Prince K. His action was to remain unknown. He got down to the bottom of the stairs, lowering himself as it were from step to step, by the banister. Under the gate he regained much of his firmness of thought and limb. He went out into the street without staggering visibly. Every moment he felt steadier mentally. And yet he was saying to himself that General T was perfectly capable of shutting him up in the fortress for an indefinite time. His temperament fitted his remorseless task, and his omnipotence made him inaccessible to reasonable argument. But when Razumov arrived at the Secretariat, he discovered that he would have nothing to do with General T. It is evident from Mr. Razumov's diary that this dreaded personality was to remain in the background. A civilian of superior rank received him in a private room after a period of waiting in outer offices, where a lot of scribbling went on at many tables, in a heated and stuffy atmosphere. The clerk in uniform who conducted him said in the corridor, "You are going before Gregor Matveich Mikulin." There was nothing formidable about the man bearing that name. His mild, expectant glance was turned on the door already when Razumov entered. At once, with the penholder he was holding in his hand, He pointed to a deep sofa between two windows. He followed Razumov with his eyes, while at last crossed the room and sat down. The mild gaze rested on him, not curious, not inquisitive, certainly not suspicious, almost without expression. In its passionless persistence there was something resembling sympathy. Razumov, who had prepared his will and his intelligence to encounter General T himself, was profoundly troubled. All the moral bracing up against the possible excesses of power and passion went for nothing before this sallow man, who wore a full unclipped beard. It was fair, thin, and very fine. The light fell in coppery gleams on the protuberances of a high, rugged forehead. And the aspect of the broad, soft physiognomy was so homely and rustic that the careful middle parting of the hair seemed a pretentious affectation. The diary of Mr. Razumov testifies to some irritation on his part. I may remark here that the diary proper, consisting of the more or less daily entry, seems to have been begun on that very evening after Mr. Razumov had returned home. Mr. Razumov, then, was irritated. His strung-up individuality had gone to pieces within him very suddenly. I must be very prudent with him, he warned himself in the silence during which they sat gazing at each other. It lasted some little time, and was characterized, for silences have their character, by a sort of sadness imparted to it perhaps by the mild and thoughtful manner of the bearded official. Razumov learned later that he was the chief of a department in the General Secretariat, with a rank in the civil service equivalent to that of a colonel in the army. Razumov's mistrust became acute. The main point was not to be drawn into saying too much. He had been called there for some reason. What reason? To be given to understand that he was a suspect, and also no doubt to be pumped. As to what precisely? There was nothing. Or perhaps Halden had been telling lies. Every alarming uncertainty beset Razumov. He could bear the silence no longer, and cursing himself for his weakness spoke first, though he had promised himself not to do so on any account. I haven't lost a moment's time, he began in a hoarse, provoking tone, and then the faculty of speech seemed to leave him, and enter the body of Counselor Mikulin, who chimed in approvingly, very proper. Very proper. Though as a matter of fact. But the spell was broken, and Razumov. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.